Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Less than 0.5% of abortions result in complications, according to the American Congress of OBGYNs. Yet abortions remain one of the most regulated medical procedures. The first wave of restrictions after Roe v. Wade in 1973 focused on limiting women's access to abortion. This included laws enforcing waiting periods, parental involvement, and state-mandated counseling. Providers in 17 states must counsel women before an abortion using government-imposed scripts, relaying discredited links between abortion and breast cancer, for example. Some states also force providers to conduct an ultrasound before having an abortion, regardless if the patient wants it or not. A new wave of restrictions have emerged since 2010, when Republicans made historic gains in state legislatures across the country. Since then, states have adopted 288 abortion restrictions. Targeted regulations of abortion providers, or TRAP laws, force clinics to comply with onerous policies designed to regulate them out of existence. From 2012 to 2014, the number of providers in Texas, for example, shrank from 42 to 18. Again, that is 42 to 18, and that is forcing women to drive hundreds of miles and spend money on hotel rooms, or have no choice but to try to conduct an abortion herself or have the baby. And studies are showing that both are now happening. A new documentary, Trapped, follows clinic workers and lawyers fighting to keep abortion safe and legal for millions of American women, many of whom are poor and uninsured. And joining me today to talk about how TRAP laws are putting women's life at risk are two guests. Dawn Porter is an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film is called Trapped, and it coincides with the U.S. Supreme Court's 2016 decision to rule on a constitutional challenge to Texas's HB2 law, which places unprecedented restrictions on clinics. Trapped premiered at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival, where it won the Special Jury Award for Social Impact Filmmaking. And Dawn Porter joins me in studio. Hi, Dawn. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations on your film.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Stephanie Totti. She is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights, an organization that uses the law to advance reproductive freedom. Stephanie serves as lead counsel in Whole Woman's Health versus Cole, which is currently before the Supreme Court. We're expecting a decision in June. And Stephanie joins me from New York. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi. Thank you for joining us. So, Dawn, I want to start off with you. You made this film after reading an article about the only abortion clinic in Mississippi. It's in Jackson, Mississippi. And at the time, you were working on another film. What inspired you to work on this documentary, Trapped?
I was in Mississippi in 2013, and I was working on a film about the Mississippi Sovereignty Commission, which was a state organization that established a spy agency to infiltrate the NAACP. So I was already, thinking about the role of state government and people's lives. And when I'm making a film in an area where I don't live, I didn't live in Jackson at the time, I like to read the local newspapers, see what's happening. And I read that there was one clinic in the entire state of Mississippi. And I was so taken aback by that. I feel like I'm a pro-choice person, and I've keep abreast of the news. And I had no idea about the rapid clinic closures across the South, but also in places in the Midwest. And so I called the clinic up and said, can I come do an interview? And they said yes. They were at the time about to argue a really important appeals case before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I met Dr. Willie Parker, who became the chief person protagonist in my film. And what he told me was just astonishing. He was living in Chicago at the time. He would fly from Chicago to Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Philadelphia, and he was providing abortions because there were so few doctors there that would perform abortions. And I was just really interested in his story. So that's really how it started.
And we have been hearing a lot, Stephanie, about the laws that have passed. It's almost, it's extremely difficult, almost impossible to keep up with them. The Guttmacher Institute reports that states have adopted 288 abortion restrictions since the 2010 midterm elections. And to put that number in context, states adopted nearly as many restrictions during the last 5 years as during the entire 15 years. And the sheer number of new restrictions enacted in 2015 make it clear that this sustained assault on abortion shows no sign of abating, according to the Guttmacher Institute. So tell us specifically about these new TRAP laws.
Sure. The acronym TRAP stands for Targeted Regulation of Abortion Providers. And these are laws that single out doctors and facilities that provide abortion care for medical regulation that is different and more burdensome than the kinds of requirements that other healthcare providers have to meet.
And so tell us about some of the new rules that these clinics have to abide by.
For example, the laws that we're challenging in Texas require that all doctors who provide abortions have admitting privileges at a local hospital, even though abortion rarely results in hospitalization and other doctors who provide outpatient procedures aren't required to have admitting privileges. The Texas law also requires that all abortions be performed in ambulatory surgery centers, which are essentially mini hospitals designed for procedures that are far more complex than abortion. And even medication abortions that involve a woman taking a series of pills, are required to be performed in these multi-million dollar surgery centers.
And Don, what struck you about what you learned about TRAP laws? You interviewed just a number of amazing people who work for these clinics and are fighting for women and girls across the country. And you spoke with a woman in Texas, Marie Sadler, Director of Clinical Services at Whole Woman's Health in San Antonio, and she was giving you a little tour of these surgical centers. And just to give people one example, she said that every center has to have drugs that are never used and they expire. They cost the clinic $1,100 a month. They have to have so much equipment on the walls that they never use. The operating room, it looks exactly the same. It's the exact same building, the same setup you would bring someone who's having open heart surgery. And none of that equipment is used.
Yeah, none of it is ever used. And as Stephanie said, you even have to give the abortion pill, which certainly is not a surgery, in those ambulatory surgery centers. You know, what really struck me, two things. One is abortion has always been a regulated procedure. It's not as if we're choosing between these TRAP laws and no regulation. These abortion clinics have been open for 10, 20, 30 years in some cases. So the unprecedented amount of attention that's not medically based is, you know, it's really serving to close the clinics. But the second thing that really struck me and is really, really bothersome is we have a healthcare crisis in this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I spent 2.5 years following these providers and traveling throughout the South in places where there is a huge lack of access to basic medical care. So to watch a beautiful surgery center when 50 miles away there are no medical facilities for people was really heartbreaking. And to have the same regulators who oppose taking federal funding for Medicaid, who, you know, have not expanded healthcare access for the most vulnerable populations in these areas was really, really angering.
In San Antonio, Marie Sadler told you that she had to turn away a 13-year-old rape victim because they couldn't find the right nurse who could administer, what was it, anesthesiology under these new rules?
Yeah.
And so then she said that this 13-year-old will have to go to New Mexico and spend $5,000 and spend 3 days there. She said it'll never happen. It's an automatic sentence to parenthood. Yeah. We sentence this 13-year-old to motherhood.
You know, the access issue, I feel like as people have discussed the abortion issue, we haven't necessarily discussed the real-world impact on people who are trying to access the service. Texas is an enormous state. It is the second largest state with women of reproductive age. 5.4 million women of reproductive age live in Texas. As you mentioned, more than half of the clinics have closed, and the remaining clinics are all clustered in cities. So large portions of Texas have absolutely no access to abortion. People are traveling really long distances. One of the, you know, the abortion opponents have not been able to overturn Roe v. Wade. So in 1993, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was another Supreme Court decision, allowed states to regulate abortion for health and safety. So since that time, states have been implementing regulations that they say are for health and safety. But what we're seeing is actually a spike in self-abortions and really dire consequences for real women.
What about that, Stephanie, the consequences of these clinics shutting down? Again, from 2012 to 2014, the number of providers in Texas shrank from 42 to 18. And it was kind of shocking to see this Washington Post story last month about a study from the New England Journal of Medicine that found poor women are having more babies, which isn't surprising because there are fewer clinics. But I'm kind of surprised that this isn't getting more attention.
The consequences are absolutely devastating for women in Texas. And for women who have the means to travel, they're able to go out of state. Those women can go to New Mexico, or they could fly to New York or California to have an abortion. But for women without the resources to travel, obtaining access to abortion becomes impossible. So the birth rate has been rising and will continue to rise. And as Dawn mentioned, many of the clinics that closed are in medically underserved areas. So these clinics weren't just providing abortion care to women. They were also a source of family planning services, of contraception, of cancer screenings and well woman exams. And women in these communities are now losing access to all of those services, and they are in a much worse off situation as a result.
And one of the women Dawn interviewed, a 43-year-old mother in Alabama who didn't think she'd get pregnant, but sometimes you can at 42. She couldn't, the clinics were closed in her area, and she went online and found herbs. She didn't take them, but the New York Times earlier this month had an op-ed called "The Return of the DIY Abortion." Stephanie, can you talk about that?
Sure. Unfortunately, these laws in Texas and similar copycat laws around the country have been leading to an increase in attempts at self-induced abortion, and this clearly puts women at risk. Women are, in some cases, buying drugs from the black market or on the internet. And if they get the real medications that are used by doctors to induce an abortion, well, that's safe. But sometimes they're getting counterfeit things, and who knows what. And sometimes they don't have proper information about how to use those medications. So I'm familiar with a case of a woman in West Texas who obtained some drugs for the purpose of causing an abortion, but she used them later in pregnancy, past the time when a doctor would use these drugs. And because she had had a prior cesarean section, the medications caused a uterine rupture, and put her in the hospital with some very serious complications. Now, during the trial, there was evidence that the Texas Department of Health had been receiving reports from hospitals about women presenting with complications from attempted self-induced abortions. And one hospital reached out to the department and said, "Are we supposed to report these as we would complications from any other abortion? Because Texas law requires that any doctor who treats an abortion complication requires report it to the state so the state can, you know, generate statistics about those complications." And the health department said, "No, we don't want to know about this. Don't report it." Which just shows not only that this is occurring, but that the state authorities are turning a blind eye to it.
According to the New York Times piece, in 2015, there were more than 700,000 Google searches looking into self-induced abortions. And when you look at the percentages, that's a drastic spike. It just keeps going up from 2010. Don, what else struck you when you met women who were talking about looking for information about self-induced abortions?
You know, one of the it actually was just heartbreaking to see people who were so wrestling with their own decisions about their own bodies and were so desperate to keep control of their lives that they would do anything. You know, so this young woman, we interviewed one woman who was a nurse, you know, and she knew the complications. She knew the possibilities. I interviewed women down in McAllen, Texas, who also had severe hemorrhaging. You know, inducing abortion without medical supervision can also be a crime. And so some women are afraid to report the actual cause, and they're getting instructions from underground abortionists who are saying, take the pills and then go to the emergency room, but don't explain what really happened, which is not good health care. And I think the facts that Stephanie is, you know, recounting and the facts that the Center for Reproductive Rights, where she is a lawyer, and there are so many other courageous, energetic lawyers fighting these laws, not just in the South, but across the country, are showing not only are these laws not improving women's health, they're actually harming women's health.
And you mentioned McAllen, which is in South Texas. That clinic closed, and that means that women have to drive about 200 miles. It's a 3.5-hour trip north to San Antonio.
If you can make it. I mean, a number of the women in McAllen are undocumented, and there's an internal border check 60 miles from the border where the Border Patrol will stop you. Every time we made this trip, they stop you. They search your car. It's really intimidating, you know, even I'm documented and it's intimidating. But for the women in McAllen who are undocumented, that trip is impossible. So you have some people trying to smuggle themselves north and take the risk, or more likely people going into Mexico or having relatives with documents go into Mexico for the day, buy drugs, which, as Stephanie mentioned, they hope are legitimate, and then you also have to hope that they're getting the proper information about how to take these drugs.
In addition to the trap laws, you've got parental consent, 24-hour waiting. You have the ultrasound laws. We'll talk later about the misinformation that doctors are even required to give to women. But again, at Whole Women's Health in San Antonio, Maria Sadler told you about a family that came to Austin, Texas from a very rural area. She said the only way they could afford to get here was to gas up their RV, bring their family. They slept in the parking lot of the clinic for 2 days with two small children.
You know, the laws, one of the law's requirements is that you have to have quote-unquote counseling, which is usually medically inaccurate. So a woman is required to present, have counseling, which sometimes includes information that abortion could lead to breast cancer, gives medically inaccurate information about the developmental age of the fetus in the first trimester. More than 80% of abortions are done in the first trimester. So this information is coming from the health department. And as Stephanie mentioned, I find this one of the most troubling aspects is most Americans are not thinking that their health departments are politicized. You trust the information that comes from your health department. So to give medically inaccurate information or to not accurately report statistics, health consequences, is a severe, you know, not following through on what you're supposed to do as a health clinic.
Dawn Porter is an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film, Trapped, coincides with the Supreme Court's decision to rule on a challenge to Texas's HB 2 law, which places these restrictions on abortion providers. Trapped opens in the Bay Area on Friday. You can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org, and we are expecting a decision by the Supreme Court in June. This is really important, because if they uphold this law, that means that other states across the country will begin shutting down their clinics. Stephanie Totti is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights, an organization that uses the law to advance reproductive freedom. Stephanie serves as lead counsel in Whole Woman's Health versus Cole, which is before the Supreme Court. You can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about these trap laws and about abortion restrictions? So like you, Don, I was shocked when Dr. Willie Parker, who works for the only clinic in Mississippi and as you says, travels around the country, he was telling a patient in the film, and I quote him, "I am required by law to tell you that by having an abortion, it can increase your risk for breast cancer. There is no scientific evidence to support that. The state also requires me to tell you that if you're having this procedure, there's a risk of complications. You can have heavy bleeding that's life-threatening. You can have a hysterectomy and lose your ability to have babies. But guess what? Those are the same risks associated with having a baby. You are not taking any extra health risks. Abortion is extremely safe."
So one of the most shocking things to me was the overt attempt to intimidate women by providing inaccurate health information. So in a number of states, there are printed pamphlets that are required to be distributed by the clinic by law. A recent study found that up to 40% of the information in these pamphlets is inaccurate. In Alabama, ironically, it's only 18 to 20% is inaccurate, but it's still inaccurate information mandated by law to be given to women. And I think it's really important to note that for these public clinics, a lot of people there are living below poverty level. So at one of the clinics that I filmed in Montgomery, 60% of the patients that come in there are living below poverty level and are not getting regular medical care. So to receive a booklet from the health department that lists these complication risks is incredibly intimidating, particularly for someone who has not had a lot of medical care and doesn't have another source to check the information. Dr. Parker, it's very interesting. So he's required to give the inaccurate information. He adds in his medical opinion, the accurate information. But imagine the confusion if you're a person who's come, and usually you're in crisis, and you're hearing two different things. So that's part of the reason we began the film with a woman saying, am I going to get pelvic inflammatory disease? Am I going to lose my ability to have children? That information is seeping into the community. And that's being, discussed unchecked by actual medical facts. It's really... It just makes me so angry. It's so intimidating to people who actually need a lot, need help.
And they're also already intimidated by the protesters outside, because in front of that Jackson Clinic and clinics across the country, you're being yelled at as you walk in. Don't kill your baby. There are other options. And then you get in and you're told that you can increase your risk of breast cancer, but there's no scientific evidence to support that. Stephanie, how is it legal to require a doctor to give misinformation?
Well, I would say it's not legal. The Supreme Court has said that states can require doctors to give certain information about abortion if the information is truthful and non-misleading. But many states have gone far beyond that to require information that's both untruthful and ideological in nature. And there's just such a proliferation of these laws that it's difficult to challenge them all and get them all struck down. And in some cases, the lower federal courts aren't willing to enforce the law. So there was a law enacted in South Dakota a couple of years ago that requires abortion providers to tell their patients both that abortion increases the risk of suicidal ideation, which is patently false, and that abortion, quote, terminates the life of a whole unique, separate, living human being, unquote. And it was challenged in court, and the Court of Appeals that oversees South Dakota upheld it in a heartbreaking and really maddening decision. So it's infuriating that doctors around the country are being forced to disseminate misinformation to their patients. But at the same time, there are a lot of caring doctors like Dr. Parker who say, look, I'm required to give you this information, but I need you to know it's not true, and here's what you really need to know in order to make an informed decision about your care.
Stephanie Totti is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights. Stephanie serves as lead counsel in Whole Woman's Health versus Cole. Dawn Porter's latest film is Trapped, and it asks the question, as the legal fights over access to abortion escalate, what remains of a woman's right to choose? Trapped opens in the Bay Area on March 18th. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your Call is a program that is much better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, please call 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call. You can also send your question via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or simply leave your comment on the website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say, and following that at noon from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, it's Bina.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the mass protests over the corruption scandal involving Brazil's state-owned oil company. It has rocked the country's political establishment. We will also discuss media coverage of Tuesday's primaries and the rise of the multi-billion dollar election industrial complex. And that's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the new documentary Trapped. Trap laws are forcing clinics to comply with onerous policies designed to regulate them out of existence, and it's working. Many clinics in the South have completely shut down. If the Supreme Court upholds the Texas trap laws, clinics will continue to close and states across the country will be free to enact similar laws. And we're expecting a decision in June. Stephanie Totti is lead counsel in Whole Woman's Health versus Cole. She's senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights. And we're also joined today by Dawn Porter, an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film is called Trapped, which takes a look at how these laws are affecting women in states like Texas and Alabama and Mississippi. It also gives a voice to clinic workers and advocates who are fighting to keep clinics open. And I hope you can see this film, Trapped, opens in the Bay Area on March 18th. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about this? I'd especially love to hear from those of you who are around in the 70s who fought so hard for these rights that are unfortunately just being taken away from us so quickly. What are your thoughts about where we are today? And what can we learn from the successes that you gained back in the 70s? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Margaret in Oakland. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had to put you on speakerphone because I wasn't hearing the person who answered the phone. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, you're fine.
Great. Rose, I'm calling today because I am 86 years old, and I remember the 70s very well. And I have recently availed myself of a book called The Story of Jane, which back then there were a group of women who taught themselves how to give abortions to other women. And they called their organization Jane. And and there were that was a way to get around to prevent to give abortions when women couldn't afford them and all that kind of stuff. And so anyway, that book is coming to me, Rose, and I'm going to mail it to you.
Oh, thank you so much. I just found it online. It's by Laura Kaplan, The Story of Jane, the Legendary Underground Feminist Abortion Service. And I'm really glad you called, Margaret, because I learned about Jane in the documentary She's Beautiful When She's Angry. And I was surprised that I'd never heard about Jane before. Dawn, had you heard about it?
I have. And actually, Margaret, your call is spot on. There have been calls to revive Jane because there is real fear about, you know, our legal system is wonderful when it works, but it is slow. And the real world consequences for women have been so alarming that I have certainly met with people who already are reviving Jane.
Reviving Jane.
Yeah. Yeah. There are efforts underway to do that.
Stephanie, what are your thoughts on that?
I applaud the activism, but as a lawyer, I just think it's a shame that politicians are forcing women to leave the healthcare system in order to get necessary services under the guise of protecting women's health. I mean, that's the most infuriating thing about these laws, is that the politicians claim that they're enacting them, you know, to protect women, but all of the available evidence shows that the laws do just the opposite, that they provide no medical benefits, and instead they delay women and in many cases prevent women from accessing abortion or force women to try to induce their own abortions or seek care outside the medical system. Every leading medical association to look at these laws, including the American Medical Association and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, has condemned them as being medically unjustified and purely political. And it's a shame that this is what women are being driven to at you know, more than 40 years after the Supreme Court established the right to access abortion care.
Well, since you brought up politics, I just wanted to mention this briefly. Abortion is really not getting much attention in the presidential election. It took the Fox News debate. Actually, it wasn't a debate. It was a town hall to finally ask Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton about abortion. In the beginning, the Republicans were asked about it when they were going after Planned Parenthood, but not so much. So just for the record, every Republican running for president wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. Donald Trump, according to the Washington Post, supports exceptions for rape and incest. Marco Rubio is out, but we should say he opposes exceptions. Ted Cruz opposes exceptions. John Kasich supports exceptions. But according to 538, John Kasich has signed every single restriction that has landed on his desk. In 4.5 years, he enacted 16 proposals related to restrictions, including an ultrasound law.
You know, it's clearly a political issue. The politicians who are enacting these laws are quite clear and on the record publicly saying they oppose abortion. So on the one hand, they will say, we're enacting these for health and safety. But in the very next breath, they will say, and we have 3 instances of that in the film, of speeches made by the governor of Alabama, the governor of Mississippi, the legislator in Mississippi, saying, we oppose abortion. And oh, guess what? Now we've gone and passed these laws.
Right, because didn't Rick Perry, he gave a speech in your film, and he talked about making abortion a thing of the past.
At any stage, which is patently unconstitutional, and yet he said that that is his intention.
And so Rick Perry from Texas has signed some of the toughest abortion restrictions, and Wendy Davis prevented passage of the anti-abortion legislation with a 13-hour filibuster, but then Rick Perry called for a special session 2 days later and signed HB2.
That's right.
And that's the law that's being challenged before the Supreme Court, Stephanie.
That's right.
Yes, that's correct.
Can you give us a sense of what happened during oral arguments? What really struck you about what you heard?
I think what was striking is that you know, several of the justices asked really pointed questions to the lawyer representing the state of Texas about the medical justification or lack of medical justification for this law and about the devastating consequences that this law would cause for women in that state. So I think the argument really helped to crystallize the constitutional problems with this law, which is that it imposes extraordinary burdens on women that aren't medically justified and will ultimately not only deprive women of their constitutional rights, but will put their health at risk. So I left the argument feeling very optimistic about the outcome of the case. I think there is a reason to be confident that the court recognizes the law for the sham that it is, and will strike it down as unconstitutional.
And so if the Supreme Court upholds the law, clinics will continue to close. States across the country will be free to enact similar laws. Stephanie, what if the Supreme Court strikes down the Texas law?
Well, that would send a strong message to other states that medically unjustified laws like this, sham laws, aren't going to be tolerated. And so hopefully that will put an end to this strategy that's been years in the making by the anti-choice movement to try to eliminate women's access to abortion through medically unjustified clinic regulations.
You know, it's really important to note that, as Stephanie just mentioned, this is a coordinated effort. These laws are not springing up. There is not some wholesale women showing up at hospitals because of abortion complications. There was no medical emergency that these laws were passed in response to. And the anti-choice people will say this is in response to Kermit Gosnell. Well, the Gosnell situation was a criminal whose clinic was not inspected for more than 16 years. There were laws on the books that should have been enforced that were not. What you've seen is Americans United for Life, an anti-choice group whose sole purpose is to overturn Roe v. Wade. And they have not been able to do that directly by a direct challenge to the law. And so what they've been doing is chipping away. It's really important for folks to understand that even if there are not trap laws in your state, the same people that are opposed to abortion are opposed to sex ed. They are opposed to IUDs. They are opposed to IVF. They are opposed to any advances in medical reproductive technology. And as these laws are chipped away, as we narrow the scope of women's reproductive choice and reproductive freedoms, that impacts us all. This is part of the culture war that we are seeing that is on the Republican side that has led to this unprecedented Republican presidential contest. And it really is a culture war that involves everyone.
Dawn Porter is an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film is Trapped, which takes a look at how these trap laws are affecting clinics in the South. And the film opens in the Bay Area on March 18th. Stephanie Todi is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights. She argued the case in front of the Supreme Court. Stephanie, was this your first Supreme Court case?
It was. It was my first time arguing at the Supreme Court.
Wow, and what an important case to argue.
It was definitely a thrilling experience, but nerve-wracking at the same time. I mean, I recognized the incredibly high stakes in this case, so I felt a tremendous sense of responsibility.
Well, if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yes, I'm 77, and boy, I remember, you know, the good old days, as Donald Trump refers to them, when, you know, young women just couldn't get an abortion. I had a friend who went to Mexico, had an abortion, and almost died. And, I mean, those were just, they were such scary times because birth control, you know, it failed occasionally, sometimes more than occasionally. And there was a doctor in Berkeley, an older man, who did try to help women who needed an abortion. I'm not exactly sure what he did, but anyways, he was, you know, he was sort of well known through the underground that you know, you could go to him and maybe he could help. But my other comment is that it's really going to be up to the young women you know, the teenagers and early 20s to really fight this battle. I mean, you know, us older women, we've done that, and we need the young women to do that. I have a almost 15-year-old granddaughter who I took to see You're Beautiful When You're, what was it, You're Beautiful
When You're Angry.
When you're angry. I took her to see Suffragette, and I took her to see the new Michael Moore movie. And boy, she's going to be out there on the, you know, on the barricades. And I think that's really important, that we need to educate these young women of, you know, what the bad old days were like, not only for abortion, but, you know, for, you know, what the Republicans and you know, as I call them, the trolls, are wanting us to go back to. And it's so frightening. I've been so stressed out about Donald Trump.
You raise a good point about education and educating the younger people, because this also is connected to money and politics. I mean, we had Jane Mayer on a couple weeks ago talking about how the Koch network funded these races across the country, where they took even moderate Republicans by surprise. They lost their seats to these very conservative politicians. And look what we have now.
Well, yeah.
And then,
you know,
go ahead, Don.
You know, I really appreciate your comments. This is a coordinated effort. So in 2008, President Obama wins the presidency. In 2010, you saw this incredible right-wing backlash that caused Tea Party leaders to be elected in many states, in many state houses. And once these conservative politicians were elected, that's when you start to see, between 2010 and today, this incredible surge. One of the number one priorities is to enact abortion restrictions, and, you know, not in response to any medical issue. So, you know, during the filming of this, I interviewed a doctor from Alabama who's been providing abortions since Roe v. Wade. And he explained, and we didn't put this in the film, it didn't, you know, when you're making a film, some things just don't fit, but he explained that before Roe v. Wade, what he would have to do is take a woman and go before a panel of all men, and the woman would have to make her case for why she needed an abortion. And he had a young girl who had been raped, and he was willing to provide an abortion for her. And he said, watching her go through the trial by these men enraged him so much that as soon as Roe v. Wade was passed, he opened an abortion practice. But, you know, I very much fear that that's what's happening. When you look at the parental consent laws, that is exactly what's happening in Alabama. In Alabama, you have to have two parents' consent. If you don't have a relationship with a parent, or you're afraid of a parent, or your parent is the parent of your child, and you cannot get consent, which I have seen happen, the clinic owners are going before these judges in Alabama who are opposed to abortion and having mini trials. Where, you know, it is this usually all male, certainly all white decision about whether or not a young girl can terminate a pregnancy that she does not want and is not capable of continuing. So you were then leading to these forced pregnancies.
It's also important to point out that, like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, you've got Americans United for Life, They're developing this model legislation that's being adopted in states across the country.
That's right. And there's also, I think, a coordinated protester movement. So you've seen the incredible racialization of the protesters. We have one woman who yells Black Lives Matter, like in our favorite use of Black Lives Matter ever. I don't see any abortion protesters concerned about Black Lives Matter movement other places. But they're called Dr. Parker a filthy Negro abortionist who's committing black genocide and killing his own race. So an incredible racialization and politicization of this health issue for women. So I understand why you're terrified, but I also understand that the providers that I follow in this film, and I hope you will take your granddaughter to go see Trapped. Mm-hmm. It will be in Berkeley, and I will be there at 3:00 for that afternoon screening to do a Q&A, but it's really important to see that there are people who are not people like the Center for Reproductive Rights. Stephanie's law firm is awesome. They are fighting these laws all over the country, and they're winning. You know, when the laws are challenged, they often are struck down. Not always, but often. And there are other clinic owners who, you know, the clinic owner, June Ayers, who's in Montgomery, and she's been there for more than 30 years. And I said to her, we've been filming all day, and it was a really tough day. And I said, you know, do you ever think about just stopping? She's a cancer survivor. And she said, I'm not leaving my ladies. And I just, you know, like it. Every time I think about that, I feel stronger. And I think that, you know, the great overwhelming majority of Americans support a woman's right to choose at right. some, you know, in some circumstance. And we need to not be the silent majority. Mm-hmm. We need to be the vocal, active majority.
Yeah. A Wall Street Journal poll recently found that the support for Roe is higher than ever. Stephanie, we have a question from a listener who says, what happens if the Supreme Court is deadlocked? You argued this case before the Supreme Court right after Justice Antonin Scalia passed away. So what happens if we get a 4-4 decision?
Well, I think that's an unlikely outcome. Let me just say that initially. And I don't think that anybody really seriously thought that Justice Scalia would vote to strike down these laws. So I don't think it really changes the it doesn't change much about how the case is likely to be decided. But if the court were to deadlock 4-4, there's two possible outcomes. One is that the court would assign the case for re-argument and hold it until a new justice is appointed, and it seems like that may be some time before that happens. Or if the court issues essentially a tie decision, that would mean that the decision of the lower court is automatically affirmed, and that would be devastating for women in Texas because the lower court in this case is the Fifth Circuit that sits in New Orleans, and it held that the laws could take effect, except it carved out a few very limited exceptions, but basically said that these laws could be put into effect, and that would mean that the 20 clinics in Texas that have already closed would have to stay closed permanently, and a dozen more clinics would have to shut down overnight. And so that would be just the impact of that ruling on women's access to abortion in Texas would be utterly devastating, and then it would mean that Louisiana, which has a copycat law, would likely be able to enforce its law, shutting clinics down throughout that state. And so then it just becomes that women have to go farther and farther in order to reach a state where abortion is still available.
All right. Well, thank you for that question. We've got time for a few more callers. Let's hear from Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Rose, for doing the show, and thank you for you all for doing this film and fighting for this issue. It's very ironic that they're saying Black Lives Matter, considering, as you said, they not only don't care about it, but I also think it's funny that they care that more women of color now are going to be having babies when in the past this is the same group that was sterilizing poor women and women of color. But anyhow, my question is, why isn't this sex discrimination? I know this is deemed under the guise of necessary medical treatment or health care, but in general, a lot of the issues attacking women nowadays, would it make a difference if we had an ERA? How would, if we had an ERA, make any difference? And how does this relate to sex discrimination in the law?
Thank you, Lisa. Stephanie, would an ERA make any difference?
I mean, I think it would certainly help, and I think there are other bills, there's legislation pending before Congress, including the Women's Health Protection Act, that could also potentially help. I mean, the Constitution already prohibits these kinds of restrictions against abortion providers, but having an ERA that makes clear that this is a form of sex discrimination, or having a law like the Women's Health Protection Act, which is essentially a voting rights act for access to abortion, it would give advocates additional tools to make sure that politicians aren't able to reduce women's access to abortion for political reasons.
Mm-hmm. I believe in the Casey decision that the people arguing on the side of reproductive rights did make the equal protection argument, but it was rejected, which if there was an ERA, as Stephanie said, you would have additional legal support for the idea that this is sex discrimination and unequal treatment of women.
All right. Well, thank you for that question. Don, we have just a couple of minutes left. What was your sort of takeaway after interviewing these incredible women and men who work at these clinics? I mean, we didn't even talk about the fact that they're putting their lives on the line every day when they go to work because they're so focused on trying to get women access.
You know, the thing that was the most heartening about being down in Alabama and Mississippi and with these remarkable people is they very much understand the physical risks, but they're just absolutely dedicated to doing this work. And, you know, they're coming in every day. And one of them said to me, you know, not everybody is a reproductive freedom fighter, but they are. And, you know, I think it's been really important for them to have this support. So, you know, the film premiered at Sundance. We brought them all out. They got standing ovations at every single screening. And, you know, they kind of were amazed at how people are so grateful for their work. And I think that that shows, you know, they're very isolated. They're living in a place where, in communities where it is dangerous to mention their work. One of the clinic owners had to resign his position in his church. And, you know, and yet they kind of wake up every day and they find a lot of satisfaction from helping people. So I really found them inspirational, you know, and I really am glad that there are people like that in the world. I'm glad there are Southerners like that. I think that they will, you know, they're very resourceful. So I think that there's reason to be very hopeful.
And Stephanie, final thoughts from you. This was your first Supreme Court case. The decision comes down in June. You've just got a couple more months.
Well, like I said, I remain optimistic about the outcome of this case. I think the evidence at trial showed very clearly that these laws provide no benefit to women and serve only to take us back 40 years to a time when women didn't have access to safe abortion care. So there's a lot at stake, but I am confident that the court will make the right decision. And that these trap laws will hopefully soon be a thing of the past.
Stephanie Totti is senior counsel at the Center for Reproductive Rights. She argued the case Whole Woman's Health versus Cole in front of the Supreme Court recently. Dawn Porter is an award-winning filmmaker. Her latest film is called Trapped, and it opens in the Bay Area on Friday. Dawn and Stephanie, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the massive protest over the corruption scandal involving Brazil's state-owned oil company, which has rocked the country's political establishment. We'll also talk about media coverage of Tuesday's primaries and the rise of the multi-billion-dollar election industrial complex. What grabbed your attention in the news this week? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.